This episode is brought to you by America's Rehab Campus. Get on the road to recovery with the best rehab in beautiful Arizona. Dial 1-833-272-7342. That's 1-833-ARC-REHAB.
Ladies and gentlemen, you are now tuned in to the Armchair.
Good morning. Thank you guys so much for tuning in to another episode of the ArtCast. My name is Buddha.
I'm Matt.
And I'm Nikila.
All right. Thank you guys for tuning in. Today's a very special episode, man. And first of all, before we get started, I want to give a shout out to Miss Callie, because I know she does the admissions, right? She brings people in, does a lot of the admissions and stuff with the people. But you came as a recommendation, Miss Leslie, from Miss Callie. So I wanted to make sure that I gave her a huge shout out. You know, continue doing what you're doing. You're out there grinding. I see you all the time when I go out there and make coffee and stuff. She's awesome, awesome human being. But today we have a very special guest. So, ladies and gentlemen, please give a warm round of applause to our good friend, Leslie. Yeah. Good morning, Miss Leslie. How are you doing today?
I'm good. How are you?
I'm doing good. If you wouldn't mind, you can grab the mic and just bring it a little bit closer. And the whole arm stretch is right there.
Okay.
Perfect, perfect. Thank you so much for coming in. How are you doing today?
I'm good.
Doing good. All right. So, I'm curious to know from your point of view, how the conversation started with you and Miss Callie about coming on the show.
Well, Callie is amazing.
She's awesome.
You know, I never really understood that I was a people person before I worked at the ARC. And she's amazing to work with. You know, she's always curious about my story. And so I slowly started opening up to Callie. She's really good at connecting with people.
Yeah.
She's the first person people see when they come through the door, a lot of people. And she is always interested in what's going on. Why did this happen? Why did you make those choices? What's the background?
Yeah.
And so that's just how it happened, you know?
That's cool.
Yeah.
Yeah, she's super sweet, man. And when I went to go introduce myself to you and, you know, talking about getting you on the show, I know that you had said that you had to come and record before a certain time because you had a situation going on where you were going to get like a surgery or something like that. What's going on?
Yeah, well, I have some problems with my mouth like a lot of addicts do. And in December, I got my entire bottom rack pulled.
Oh, no.
And it's been fine. Like, I was nervous about that, but I was determined to do it and let other people see me go through it, because a lot of us addicts, that's something we have to deal with. It's just a fact.
Yeah.
And so I'm getting the top done and plates put in.
Okay.
On May 10th.
Oh, man.
Mm-hmm.
Wow. That's nuts.
Yeah.
Dental work and like any kind of mouth work is painful too.
Well, the dentist told me, you know, because I definitely don't like people around my face and in my face and doing things to me.
Yeah.
And he was like, wow, you're hard to work with. He was like, so you don't want to be anesthetized, like put under for this? And I was like, no. And he said, what if I give you a discount?
Really? That's what he said.
Wow. I was like, well.
So you're not getting any anesthesia for the procedure?
I am now. Oh, he talked me into it because he was like, he was like, you're kind of difficult. Because I would tell him, don't put anything metal in my mouth.
Yeah, it's a scary thing.
And only come near me when you have to. So he was like, he was like, we're going to put you under for this.
Dental work is so scary. And it's like, it's one of those things where it's like, not only is it painful, but it's also a mind game. Like, while they're, because you see everything if you're awake.
Yeah, absolutely. Yes.
Oh, man. It reminds me of that scene, I don't know why, of Finding Nemo when they see the little girl and they're getting her teeth. A lot of people are freaked out by the teeth work, man.
The dentist?
Yeah, my mom's been working at an orthodontic office or a dental hygienist my whole life. So it's like I've never had that fear.
That always reminds me of the Rudolph movie, the cartoon with the little boy. He's like, I'm going to be a dentist.
Oh, yeah. You know,
that's cool. Yeah, oh, yeah, I remember that. Yep.
Heck yeah, man. We're all misfits here.
And it seems like all the dentists look like that, like blonde hair, glasses.
That's funny. Oh, man. Well, Miss Leslie, dude, thank you again for coming through. I don't know if you've ever heard the format of the episodes. We kind of we dive a little deep. We ask questions, you know. So I would love to get to know you from back when you were a little kid. Were you born here in Tucson, Arizona?
No, I'm from Northeast Philly. I was born and raised in Northeast Philly.
Nice.
And yeah,
I was just thinking that.
Pretzels, cheesesteaks, all the good food.
Yeah, I know. That's what I miss most is the food. But they have good food out here, too.
Yeah, it's okay. It's just different. You know, I did a lot of work out in Philly. My boss was out there. And I used to love going to Philly.
Really?
These little hole-in-the-wall places that just look like, you know, nothing's there. And you walk in, there's like two tables. And then they're serving, pumping out all kinds of sandwiches and just
dang
food that is unhealthy but great to eat.
Absolutely. Is there any places in Tucson that are even comparable as far as cheesesteaks go? Because I can't say that I've honestly ever had a real cheesesteak.
You know, I don't know about cheesesteaks, but there was a place called Tony's Deli on 22nd and Wilmot.
Tony's Deli.
It was right next to my dojo, and Don Hinsman and I would go over there.
Yeah.
After fight training, we would go over there and have pizza. They had the best pizza at Tony's Deli, and you could get Lugatel cheese.
Heck yeah.
It's the only place. Yep.
All right, I have to keep that in mind. Tony's Deli.
Is it still there?
No.
Yeah, I don't think it's still there.
Oh, no?
No.
It's not.
Okay. All right. It's all good, man. There's got to be somewhere around here. I always have that fear where it's like, if I'm going to eat something, I want to make sure I get a good version of it. Because then when I meet somebody who's from Philly, they're like, dude, it ain't shit. What you ate?
It's garbage.
Yeah, it's garbage, dude.
So you were born in Philly?
Yeah.
And then how long did you live in Philly for? Is that where you completed school? You grew up the whole time?
Well, I did not have the ideal childhood. I was adopted. And I was adopted by a family that was not a healthy family.
Yeah.
There was a lot of abuse. And, you know, from a very young age, I knew I was different because other kids didn't want to hide in the closet and drink their parents' alcohol.
Wow.
And I did. And, like, when I would ask the other kids, come on, let's go drink, at, like, 9, 10 years old. They would be like, no, we don't want to do that. But I did want to do that. And like, I would be in the woods starting fires, playing with matches.
Pyro.
Yeah. And like, I just always knew there was something different about me that I didn't relate to the world like, you know, the other kids did.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And I started using at a very young age. My parents took me out of school in seventh grade.
Really?
Yeah.
These are your adopted parents.
Mm-hmm. They took me out of school in seventh grade and homeschooled me. I didn't really, you know, my education, I went to school there, but only till the seventh grade.
Did you have siblings growing up?
I had an adopted brother, yeah. Yes.
Older, younger?
Older.
Older?
Older. He's 4 years older than me.
Nice.
Mm-hmm. Wow.
Did the transitioning from regular school to homeschool, was that harder on you, or was that a good transition?
I wasn't really homeschooled. They just basically took me out of school in seventh grade because I was starting to like want to talk to counselors about what was going on at home.
Oh my God. Wow.
Yeah. And I think that's why they took me out of school. I was interested in writing. I did a lot of journaling. And so I think they were nervous. Looking back on it now, I think they were nervous that I was going to say something.
Oh, my God.
Yeah. That was the way for them to control the situation was, mm-hmm. Hey, we're going to homeschool you.
Yeah.
Wow.
Were they, you know, church oriented?
Yes, hyper religious, neo fundamentalist Baptist.
Wow.
Yes.
Okay.
Jeez. Yes.
And it goes on some of the stuff we were talking about yesterday.
Yeah. Huh? It's so sad to see that. I mean, you know, not to get too much into, you know, the abuse and stuff that you experienced, but was that something that you and your brother both equally had experienced?
No.
No?
No.
Oh, man. I'm so sorry to hear that.
Yeah.
Okay. So you're growing up, of course, you're troubled. You're dealing with all these circumstances at home.
Trauma, you know, early on.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Did you have like... were you, when you were in school till seventh grade, I mean, was school easy? Was it, hard?
It was very hard because, you know, I was always looking to, for something to numb that pain.
Yeah.
And I was different. So I got picked on a lot and I didn't know how to make connections with people because I didn't really, wasn't nurtured in that way.
Mm-hmm.
And so, I was pretty much an outcast in school.
Okay.
And I got charged with having a bunch of drugs in my backpack and I got sent to juvenile. At the time, they just sent me to a place in North Carolina for like 10 months.
Yeah.
Oh, so
yeah.
Like one of those troubled youth camps.
Man.
And how was that? Did you experience, every time I talk to somebody that has gone there, has experienced trauma from those places as well.
Yeah, it was definitely traumatic for sure.
Jeez. So were there ever, because I know, you know, people, we were talking about this yesterday, people have, you know, there's always... people always have that like dual side. There's a, you know, they show like that fake. And then there's also those people that have that really ugly side about them. Did you ever experience any type of love at all from your adopted parents? Or was it just pretty much take complete advantage of the whole situation of you being in their care?
There wasn't a lot of love.
No.
It wasn't, you know, like I said, there wasn't a lot of nurturing.
Yeah.
And it's something I took with me into my adulthood. Like mm-hmm. I really struggled with having that, you know, that example of what it is to be nurtured, what it is to be a nurturing person.
Yeah. Any kind of intimate relationship, whether it was with a friend or, mm-hmm. you know, someone you're dating, things like that, that stuff just sticks.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
Because it's affected at the foundation.
Well, yeah.
You know
it's
what I mean?
So early on, I mean... when we're little, we're like little sponges, you know, and to deal with that kind of trauma and stuff early on and just traumatic event after traumatic event, you know, it's just like, I can't even imagine. I mean, that's... Yeah.
You started getting into trouble, right? I know you said that you were drinking and stuff at like 9 years old. Who introduced you to that? Was that something you did on your own?
That was completely on my own. I sought out any opportunity to change my headspace. You know, now I understand that's what it is. I didn't know then. Now I understand it was something to change my headspace. I was 9 or 10 years old and I was breaking into elementary schools just to go in there and walk around. Like, you know, and I wasn't really, I just wanted to, cause it gave me that tingly feeling like I'm doing something I'm not supposed to do.
Yeah.
And, you know, that's like, I was always pretty much alone. I wasn't allowed to, you know, my adopted parents were very controlling. I was not allowed to go have friends. I wasn't allowed to do things other kids were allowed to do. And
you think that had to do with the fact of the abuse and stuff?
Yeah, I really do.
They didn't want you to confide in a little friend or anything like that. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
That control thing too.
Again, yeah.
You know?
Wow.
It's sad.
Yeah, it is.
It's horrible. When you got caught with the drugs in your backpack, what kind of drugs do you have in there?
LSD.
How old were you?
I was like, at that point, I think I was 13.
13.
It was about 13, yeah.
Were you rolling when they caught you? Were you were?
Sure.
Oh, shit. So you didn't even see a person. You just saw like a snake or something in front of you at the time.
Snake arresting her.
You know, it was just a crazy time in my life where I was, you know, looking back on it now, I was just trying to get out.
Yeah.
I was trying to get out.
Or feel numb. So you didn't have to feel the, you know, all the trauma, you know, when we're using it, it kind of blocks those, you know, it's either, you know, you're just happy.
Yeah.
Whatever happy looks like, right? You're happy when you get your drugs and you're sad when you don't have them. And then you're happy when you get them back.
Yeah.
And then you're sad when you run out. There's no like rainbow of feelings, you know, or there's some anger mixed in there too. Mm-hmm. I shouldn't say sad. You don't have your drugs. It's more like anger.
Yeah.
I'm out. Shit.
Man, you know, crazy.
But it's the whole thing of talking about being uncomfortable in your skin, you know, and then when you don't have to be in your skin, when you're on something that's changing your mindset, that's not your reality anymore. That's the escape part, yeah. You know, and really sad. I mean, at such a young age to, mm-hmm. you know, 9, 10 years old, hey, I'm going to have a couple swigs out of this bottle so I don't have to feel the crap I'm feeling at 9 or 10 years old.
Yeah, it is. It does. It sucks that kids have to go through that. But I'm not the only, you know, mm-hmm. unfortunately, I am not the only adopted yeah. child or child in the system.
Yeah,
that this happens to a lot of children.
Now, do you know who your real mom and dad were?
So, yeah, that's where the story gets. Now it's when the story gets. This is why I don't tell my story. So yeah. I'm just going to be honest and say.
If you're uncomfortable and you don't want to, we're just asking questions. We don't want you to feel uncomfortable.
Yeah,
whatever
absolutely
you want to share, you share. Whatever you don't want to share, it's okay.
No, I came prepared. Okay. I'm going to do this, but because I trust you. I trust you and I trust you and I know you're going to do right by me. But the reason I have made my mind up to share, even though it makes me very uncomfortable, I always feel like people aren't going to believe me. And I think that is a feeling that's been ingrained in me since, you know, from a very young age, because yep. that's always what they said. If you say anything, no one will believe you. Because I was raised by this very religious family that my uncle, who was part of the abuse, was actually a missionary in the Philippines.
Jeez.
And he was very, like, prominent in the church. And he always told me, if you say anything to anyone, they'll never believe you, and we'll just say you're crazy. And so I really carried that through the rest of my life, I feel. And, you know, so when I was going through this stuff, I had this very active fantasy life. And I always felt like one day I'm going to meet my biological parents and they're going to rescue me. And unfortunately, that's not really how it happened. So I was able to meet my biological mother. And she was very sick. She had the disease of addiction, which is probably where I inherited from.
Yeah.
And she was, you know, doing a lot of pills, and she was a raging alcoholic.
How'd you find her?
It's crazy. So when I was born, I was 2.5 months premature, and I weighed 2.5 pounds at birth.
Wow.
And I had to be in an incubator for 25 days. But because the circumstances of my birth were so, like, you know, unique, mm-hmm. My adopted aunt worked with my biological mother at the mall. They were hairstylists. So because I was 2.5 pounds when I was born, like, she was actually working with my mother at the time. And she was like, when I became old enough to know that I want to know who my mother is. Mm-hmm. And I don't really understand why my adopted mom went along with it and told the family I was interested in knowing. But when she did, my aunt was like, I know who her mother is. I've known this whole time. So that's how I met my biological mother.
Wow. How old were you when you met her?
I was like 14.
Oh, 14.
15. Yeah.
Was there any, like, emotions that you felt towards your aunt that she had known this whole time when you found out?
Not really.
No.
No.
She knew nothing?
She knew who my mother was, so gotcha. That's how I found her.
So you went to go meet her?
Yeah. She came to my house. My adopted mother, mom called her, and she came to my house. That's how we met.
Wow.
Yeah. And we developed a relationship, and she was very sick, you know, but I was completely dependent on the people around me because that's what abusers do.
Yeah.
I wasn't allowed to drive a car. I was interested in school, but I wasn't allowed to go. I wasn't really allowed to do anything. Mm. And so my mother would pick me up and take me to her house. And that was a whole nother facet of the trauma that I went through.
Wow. And this is your biological mom that you're referring to.
Yes. Yeah.
So her coming into your life at 14, it didn't fill some empty holes. It created more trauma for you.
It did. Absolutely, it did. But I mean, if you now looking back, when I think about it, it really makes sense, because that's why I was given up for adoption, right? Because mm-hmm. she knew she couldn't take care of me. I mean, it does make sense that, you know, she... And my father was in prison my entire life. He got out. I was 16 years old. And like then I thought, okay, so my father's going to rescue me. Because I heard all these stories. All my mother's friends were like, do not meet your father. He's this 6 foot, 6 and a half guy. He's in prison for stabbing an 80-year-old man for his wallet. Stay away from him. And I was just like, no, this, he's going to rescue me.
This is my savior. Yeah.
Yeah. Man. Yeah. Yeah.
And you never met him, or you did?
I did meet him. Yes, did. I did.
Wow.
Man.
So, you know, so, okay. So you're experiencing all of this at such a young age, not even knowing who you are as a person, trying to just find a way out, whatever it may be. I know you said earlier that you had an adopted brother. You know, was that your only friend at the time, the only person that you could confide in with anything, or was that relationship rocky as well?
That was all bad too. Yeah, wow. It was just the way that family dynamic is. Men are in control. If you're a woman, you don't really count. I mean, you just don't really count.
Wow.
Yeah.
That's horrible.
Yeah.
I was telling Matt yesterday, we were having a conversation. You know, I love my grandfather, but he's, you know, he was raised in that old school mentality. And my mom had a full ride scholarship to be a seamstress. She was really into that in high school. And my grandfather didn't let her go to college because she was a woman. So it's crazy to think that, you know, so many. That machismo shit is, I don't know where it comes from, but there's a lot of families that have that.
I think that's pretty prevalent in that religion too, right? That specific one. I know there's a bunch of different religions, but I've, you know, read a lot, and it seems to be like, you know, men are in charge of everything. And, you know,
it's crazy.
They don't put women on the same level. About what year is this? So you were 14?
Yeah, I was born in 1975.
Oh, me too.
So it, me too. That's the thing. That's the thing. Like, that's hard for me to tell my story because so much. So, like, when I turned 13, basically, so much happened in such a short period of time that, like, when I look back and I'm trying to, like, put the events in some kind of order, talk with my hands a lot.
Oh no, you're fine.
Puzzle you're trying to put.
Yeah, it's and all the trauma, and then I re-traumatize myself, and so like my mind starts to not work right, and so like I just know that I just know what happened. I don't know what year it was. I was about these ages. Mm-hmm. It's hard for me to like really.
And two, I think a lot of times too, when we go through traumatic things in our lives too, the, like you said, the time and the date and all those things really kind of get askewed, you know, and because we're so just wrapped up in what's going on,
trying to survive,
yeah,
trying to survive. I was trying to survive, you know.
Man. So during this homeschooling stuff, did you get your GED and stuff?
No, absolutely.
So the homeschooling was basically a joke.
Yeah, you know? No, there was no homeschooling.
There was social life.
No.
You didn't play any sports.
No.
Wasn't part of any clubs, you know, didn't have like
no prom
interaction.
That.
Yeah, like, you know, normal kids are supposed to experience.
I was, so the good one thing I look back on that I'm really glad I was a part of was my adopted parents owned a spa. It was called La Crest Health Spa, and it was in Lansdale. And it was a 3-story spa, and the first aerobics class I took, I was 4 years old. And I remember being with the other women and being like, why don't I look like them? I can't.
And this is so, back when they wore the big socks, right?
Yeah, yeah. And had the leotards.
Bands and stuff everywhere.
Oh, yeah.
Jazzercise.
Yeah.
Good music back then, man.
So you really enjoyed that, though?
I did. I would run around that place because my mom would take me to work with her.
Mm-hmm.
And I would run around that place and just be like lifting weights. And
yeah.
And I took right to it.
It was a release for you. Probably felt safe there too, didn't you?
Yeah, I did.
Did you, are you a big music buff? Do you like music?
I wasn't allowed to listen to music.
Really?
Yeah, I wasn't.
Loose.
Yeah.
No dance. Well, that was no dancing. Sorry.
Wow. So like, how were you, because after you got taken out of school, you were still using, right? So you, drugs as well?
Yeah.
So how are you getting them? Like, did you have certain like friends like that you would just kind of keep to yourself and stuff like that?
Oh, yeah. I would just run off. They'd be like, where's Leslie? We don't know. She's in the woods somewhere. Like, you know, I would just run off and come across, you know. I just had this knack for attracting people. I mean, I guess that's just how life is. Like, had this knack for attracting people that, well, I was under bridges and, you know.
Perfect drug locations.
Approaching you when you're on your LSD. Oh, man.
You did a lot of hallucinogenics.
So when I was in basically prison at 14 in North Carolina because they didn't want to keep me in Pennsylvania. I don't know why. Back then when you were a kid and you got serious charges, they just sent you to it, sent you
like a boarding school or
it was a prison in North Carolina. But so when I was there, I was the only kid there. Everybody else was an adult. And
is that when you got caught for the drugs?
Yeah.
So you were 14.
And And so I was the only kid there. And one day, this girl was like, hey, if we eat this decon rat poison, we'll trip because there's strychnine in it. I was
shit.
Nobody else wanted to do it. I was like, I'm down. Let's do it.
Crazy. Oh, man.
Yeah.
So you were there for 10 months.
Yeah.
And then you go back to Philly.
Yeah.
Back into the same thing, just different trauma to the back to the old trauma again.
Yeah.
So you're about, 15?
Yeah.
When is it you kind of got out of that household?
So when I was 15, I met my husband, and he was, I actually knew him since I was 12. We went to church together.
Mm-hmm.
And when I was 15, I was like, hey, we always talked about getting married. We were kids, you know, and my parents didn't want me to see him anymore. So, you know, as usual, they didn't want me to see anyone. Yeah. But I was like, I have this idea. Let's get me pregnant and we'll get married. He was like, okay. So that's
Here, I have to. I'm sorry. That was Dustin right there.
And so that's what we did. I got pregnant very quickly, and we got married, and we went to Disney World for our honeymoon.
Nice.
Wow.
And you were how old? 15?
Yeah. And,
is he the same age as you?
He was 2 years older than me.
Older?
And okay. Yeah. And, so I went to a doctor to get our ultrasound, and we found out the baby had Down syndrome. And yes, horrible story. I'm so sorry.
No. This is your story.
This is your story.
This is your story, man. There's someone out there that's going to relate to this and needs to hear it.
And you will feel a lot better after we're done, too.
It's crazy how comfortable I am right now. But
hopefully you're very comfortable. Yeah.
Thank you very
much. I don't
know
about that guy. He looks kind of shady.
I didn't even know you could read. I'm still caught up on that thing.
And so our son had Down syndrome, and it's the hard part to talk about. So he was born And he was on a lot of ventilators and everything else. And then he died. And when that happened, like, I was like, I don't even think I was 16 yet. I wasn't 16 yet.
Yeah.
And he died in December. I turned 16 in March. So,
so you're a Pisces?
I'm an Aries.
Aries.
Yeah. Shout out.
And I didn't know at the time that my husband was heavily using heroin. He was a very functional addict. Mm-hmm. And he was actually working with people with developmental disabilities, and he was doing very well for someone his age in that field. Yeah. And I was not doing well. I stayed home. You know, I didn't work. I didn't have a GED. I didn't even have an ID or anything. And so I was staying home, and he was really worried about me, and his answer for that, he was 17, 18 maybe. Mm-hmm. His answer for that was, hey, this is the drug I'm doing and it's helping me. Maybe you should try it. And so that's when I started doing heroin. Was during that time.
Yeah.
My biological mother came over one day and saw the needle marks in my arm, and she was like, I'm getting you out of here. And I don't remember like a lot from that time, but I know I left and I told him, if you want us to get back together, you have to get off the drugs. We can't keep doing this. And he went to rehab. My mother continued to drink, and they let him out on furlough. He went and bought some dope, went back to the rehab and died. So then on the day of his funeral, I just completely lost my mind when I found out he was dead. I remember when they told me, I went like into this tunnel. It was like I was in this tunnel. It was the weirdest thing. Everybody sounded far away. I just lost my mind. I was convinced like he wasn't dead. All of that. I went through all of those emotions.
The stages of grief, the mm-hmm. different stages.
Mm-hmm. And were you sober at this time?
I think so.
Yeah, that's probably why you're feeling all those feelings too, right?
Man.
I mean, I don't know that. I mean, I don't remember it real clearly. Like, I'm sure if I got a hold of alcohol I was drinking or my mom's pills, who knows? I can't really remember. But,
So in that short amount of time, you lost your son.
Yeah.
And then you lost your husband.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
On top of all the other
trauma
in the 15, 16 years leading up to that.
Mm-hmm. So where do you go in that situation? Like,
I
just moved to Arizona.
When I came to Arizona.
Did you move out here with your biological mother?
I moved out here. So on the day of my husband's funeral, my biological father called me. And he was like, this is how he phrased it. I woke up this morning and I felt like you needed me. And so I'm calling you. And I was like, it was that magical thinking that a lot of us addicts have, that mm-hmm. magical thinking. And I was like, okay. And I told him, you know, my husband just died. I lost my son. And he was like, come out here and visit me. I'm in Arizona. He had got out of prison. Mm-hmm. He was in Graitersford prison for like my entire life. And when he got out of prison, they told him he couldn't be in the state of Pennsylvania. So he moved to Arizona.
And what do you mean about the magical thinking? The fact of like the savior? Is that what you're referring to?
Yes.
Was he aware that all this had happened to you before he called? Or was this like a complete God shot type of a thing? Like he just called you out of that same day?
I think he was talking to my mother, but she was such a raging alcoholic that there's no, like she might not even remember talking to him. Gotcha. So there's no way to really know.
Okay.
But I did move out here to meet him and ended up staying.
It was like 91, 92, somewhere in
right
there.
Right around there.
Yeah. And was it down here in Tucson area?
Mm-hmm.
That you moved?
Okay. We were actually living in Tubac when he had a shop in Tubac. He's an artist.
Okay.
Oh, nice. Like paints and sculptures and...
Sculptures, yeah.
Nice.
Yeah.
And have you been back to Philly since? Like, have you
seen back for my mother's funeral.
Your biological mother's?
Yes. She died of this disease of addiction when I was 26 years old.
Wow.
So I'm just going to fast forward this story.
However you want.
Basically, my father was a very unhealthy person. He was a very violent person. He, you know, he had this, he's 6'6"
Big man.
And he looks just like the paintings that everybody does of Jesus. He looks exactly like that. And so he had this like weird God complex. Like we are, we can do whatever we want. We're superior human beings. And he was very like, and I was so limited in my, I didn't have any resources. I had no, I had this image of that I was going to be rescued.
Yeah.
And that's not how it happened. And I remember I went through there where I would go to bed at night and I would be praying, God, please don't let me wake up in the morning. I don't want to wake up tomorrow. And every time I would wake up in the morning, I would be so mad at God. And I was just couldn't understand why, if there is a God, why is this happening? Mm-hmm. And so I was in that situation for a long time. And that's when I was really using a lot. I was doing a lot of meth. He introduced me to meth.
Your dad.
Yeah. And I was doing a lot of meth. I was doing a lot of heroin. I was, you know, he had me, I was working in bars. He always told me, if you leave, I'll find you and kill you. Wow. And so one day, you know, and that's how I started fighting. That's when I started fighting. I got to a point in my life where it was, no one's coming. No one's coming to rescue me. Mm-hmm. I have to rescue me. And like, I would be fighting for my life just to survive. And I started being able to do it. And
that confidence and
like, just like physically fighting, I started getting good at it.
Oh
yeah.
Oh.
I would be physically fighting for my life. Yeah. And I started, you know, getting kind of, you just to survive. Mm-hmm. I got good at that.
So this is the relationship that mm-hmm. with your dad, he was putting that abuse on you, that physical.
Yeah.
Man. Yeah. Okay.
And so I realized one day, I'm just done. I can't, either I'm going to die or he's going to die. I'm not staying here anymore. Yeah. And I told him, because he always told me, if you leave, I'll kill you.
Yeah.
And I one day just said, you're going to just have to kill me because I'm leaving. And I left. Mm-hmm. And I moved right. I had met a guy one trailer away. And so that's where I went. I was like, I'm leaving. I'm not going to be scared of you anymore. And it was crazy how, as soon as I called him on that, it was like the monster just disappeared. Like he just had no more power. Mm-hmm. My fear was how he controlled me. And I remember that was a very powerful lesson for me to learn, is that my fear is what allowed him to control me.
Since you were a baby, that's what was instilled in you, though, mm-hmm. because of, you know, the adoptive parents and all that situation, right? It's, you lived your life in fear for, I don't know, how old were you when you, you know, moved out on your own?
Moved out here.
So, yeah, you moved out here and you were like 20, 21.
No, I moved out here. I was about 16.
16.
Yeah.
And how long were you in that toxic, you know, home relationship?
Years. Yeah, I was about 21. When I left.
Okay.
That's when you moved in with the other guy at
mm-hmm.
the trailer.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Wow.
And still using still?
Yeah. I used every single day, all day long, did a lot of drugs. I was the addict that people would be like, I don't want any more, I'm done. Like, and I'd still be going.
Yeah. Yeah. Is there any other? Almost the same way.
That's crazy. Is there more?
Well, you're not going to do yours, so I'll do yours.
Man.
Yeah.
Wow. So, okay. So, like, how did that work, though, living with this guy? You said one trailer away. I mean, was your dad, did he just realize threatening wasn't going to work on you anymore at this point?
Yeah.
Okay. Mm-hmm.
Did you guys still talk?
You know, I had kids and.
How many children you got?
I have two that can, you know, my youngest and my oldest.
Mm-hmm.
And then I eventually adopted twins.
Oh, nice.
And I also raised my stepdaughter.
Wow.
Oh, wow. Houseful.
So, yeah.
Yeah.
But, you know, that kind of came later. Like, I, my oldest son's father and I weren't together long because I was using and doing all this stuff. And, you know, yeah, it was just, my life was a mess.
Now, how was your relationship with your kids then? Were did you take what you went through and completely, I know sometimes people break that cycle, right? And completely 180 over here trying to give their kids, you know.
My kids, my children taught me how to love.
Mm, yeah.
I didn't know what love was till I had my kids.
Yeah.
And my kids are everything to me. They're everything to me. And, you know, my son, so I got this tattoo.
Mm-hmm.
My son has the same tattoo, same stencil right here. My other son has it right here. Mm. And, I have these butterflies. My son got a big butterfly right here. He was like, Mom, so I have these stars and he has lightning bolts. My friends are like, Leslie, your son wants to be exactly like you. Like,
that's cool.
And he's 25.
Is that your oldest?
Yeah, my oldest son.
Nice.
And so, like, my sons are the light of my life. And everything I do, like, they kept me, when I want to give up, they keep me fighting. They teach me way more than I could ever teach them.
Yeah.
You know? When I started working at the Ark, you know, when I got clean, after my injury, cause I had a major injury, when I got clean, it was because my son walked into my room and I was, you know, I didn't walk for 5 years.
Wow.
My son walked into my room and I was like, man, Billy, I'm sorry. I'm so fucked up. And he looked at me and he was like, that's okay, Mom. I've already mourned your death. And like it was like someone slapped me in the face. Wow. And I just knew I had that moment of clarity where I knew this is what my kids are seeing me at my very worst. This, like, I have no strength right now. That's when I made the choice to go to detox. I went to detox. I got clean. I was on Suboxone for 2 years.
Man.
I started working out again. I just want to show them that how strong you can, it's okay, we make mistakes, but you can turn it around.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
And you don't have to live in your mistakes. And you know what, honestly, the Ark, it's like when I started working here, I remember coming here and I'd be like, this is where I'm supposed to be. And like, I just know that I am so glad that I stayed here, because Katie is amazing. She's like one of the most amazing people I've ever met. Katie and Sammy and Kelly. And, you know, I am so lucky to work with these strong women that, you know, are just supportive and amazing. And this is what it feels like to be somewhere.
Be a part of.
Yeah. And
feel a part of.
Yes.
Right? Not just be on the outside looking in, being actually in the pack.
Yeah.
Wow. Right.
And yeah. Feeling welcomed, and I hope you feel welcomed here.
I do.
You know, welcomed and loved and all that stuff that we search for.
Yeah.
And when you find that, it's, we talked about it yesterday, when you find that, it's just,
yeah,
it's beautiful
thing. Where you been?
Yeah.
Yeah, for real.
So, like, I want to stay in the solution on this, too, because I know my story is, like, crazy, but...
When did you get sober?
So, I had an injury... I was using needles forever, and not very particular about, you know, how I kept them.
Yeah.
And I got septic arthritis in my hip, but I didn't know that's what it was.
Yeah.
And so I just, you know, I just was like in my room, and my roommate would be like, one day he came in and said, "You're going to die. You're yellow." I couldn't feel my entire leg from the hip all the way down. And he was like, "You have to go to the hospital." They couldn't even, they had to carry, he had to carry me out standing up because they couldn't fit me through the hallway and I couldn't walk. And so I got to the hospital and they thought they were going to have to take my entire leg off from the hip, but they did a surgery where they took my hip apart, scraped it all out and put it back together. And during that surgery, I flatlined for 16 full minutes. No oxygen, no heartbeat. I was in a coma 2.5 months. That's how I lost my hearing.
Wow.
That's, oh yeah. My. And yeah.
And how old were you at this time?
It was 8 years ago.
8 years ago.
I was 39. I was 39. Yeah.
39. But you, after you finally, so all of these things that you experienced, being in that room when your son came in and everything, you just were at that tip.
And that was, you said, 2 years after your injury?
Yeah, it was about
so
5 years maybe after, yeah.
And that's when you started to make a decision.
Yeah.
Yeah. Where'd you go to treatment at?
I went to Cornerstone.
Nice.
Okay. Several times, because I didn't know anything about recovery. Mm-hmm. And I went to Cornerstone and I detoxed, and the doctors were like, "We don't know if you're, we don't think you're going to be successful."
Nice encouragement, of course.
And lose.
Yeah, we don't think you're going to be a good. Yeah, that's ridiculous.
And so I was actually in a wheelchair when I got to Cornerstone Hospital, and you know, that's where I started getting up and trying to walk down the hallway. It was in my brain, like, I could walk, but I would fall, and I would get upset. And, like, so I just didn't.
Yeah.
And I started walking there. My kids would come and see me and be like, "Mom, walk here. There's railings. You can walk here." And the nurses would be like, "No, we're not going to let her do that." And my kids were like, "She's walking."
Wow.
And so, you know, I did my Cornerstone Hospital bit. I think I was there 4 or 5, maybe 6 times. And at some point it stuck. And mm-hmm. I did it on my own for 2 years. I did the Suboxone thing and I did a taper. But it took me so long to get off that.
For being on it, yeah, for 2 years. It takes a long time.
Wow. Yeah.
You know,
and
you're like, crap.
Yeah, and that's okay. Like, that's what it took for me.
Mm-hmm.
And guess what? Like, so I have 3.5 years clean. I absolutely count.
I have to give it to you because that's beautiful. 3.5 years.
3.5 years.
Yes. And I absolutely count the time that I was on Suboxone as my clean time.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
That's what's right for me.
Mm-hmm.
I started working out again, going to the gym a lot. And I started, I didn't know about Narcotics Anonymous.
Mm-hmm.
And I found it at 2 years clean. And it's just been amazing. Like, now I have all these new friends in recovery. I'm learning how to live a new life. And, you know, it's not a perfect life and I'm not a perfect person, but that's okay, because if I'm not making mistakes, it's
growing.
Because I'm not trying hard enough.
Yeah.
If I growth means making, being okay making mistakes and learning from them and growing, you know?
The 2 years you did it by yourself, you didn't, no sponsor, no meetings,
no,
none of that.
I didn't know anything about that.
Put the mouthpiece in and grit and bared it.
Yeah.
You know, and that's a tough space to be too, because there's so much other things as you learned right after, and you get into the Narcotics Anonymous and you find that fellowship and you find like the honesty and the empathy and all these different things that kind of come at you, right? And like working these steps to release some of that stuff you're still carrying, because you're still carrying it all, right?
Yeah.
You know, once you start letting go of things I'm the type, all that stuff go, but then I'll be like, oh shit, I better grab it and carry it for a minute again.
Well, you know what it did for me? When I started working my steps, it was a magical experience in my life because every step becomes relevant. And I should probably know this. What is it? The ninth step where we make amends? Mm-hmm. Like my sponsor told me, you're missing someone on your list. And I was like, how do you know?
Yourself.
She said, it's you, yourself. Wow. And so all this working steps and everything. So my father lives in, I have two houses. My father lives in one of my houses. He's always lived there. Basically, I told him, my kid, that's their grandpa. Mm-hmm. And
this is your biological dad, mm-hmm, right?
And he is important to them. They never knew anything he did to me. Yeah. Yeah. And so I always told him, go be in that house and leave me alone. Don't just leave me alone. So when I started working the steps and I started processing all this stuff, I was able to come to a place where I was like, I'm going to let it go. I'm going to let it go. And it opened up this door for me where I was able to let go of not only all the pain, which was huge for me. I never knew I don't think I would have been able to stay clean if I wasn't able to let go of that pain. So I came to this place where I was able to let go of all the pain, all the anger, all the resentments that I had that were keeping me sick. And it was like this magical experience because now it's like so I started turning into this new person in recovery, where I was like this, starting to be this healthy person. And then I would see him and it would take me back to that old person a little bit. Mm-hmm. Now I don't have to do that. Now when I see him, I'm still this healthy person. Mm-hmm. And it's okay. He's still sick. He probably will always be sick, but it doesn't have to be me that's sick with him. So I let go of all that pain and all that resentment. And now when I look at him, all I feel is sorry for him because like he's 74 years old and he's sick and he's not doing well. And I'm able to be a caretaker for him. Like I give him what he needs. When he needs money, I give it to him. When he's sick, we take him to the doctor, stuff like that. I didn't do it for him. I did it for me.
Yeah.
And it's been this great healing for me. Then I get to come to work in a place where I feel genuine, you know, because like I know when someone comes to me with trauma, I know what they're going through. I've been there. And like, I wouldn't give anything that I went through in my life. I wouldn't give up on any of it because now I'm able to be there for 63 people when they need me.
Yeah.
And there's not anything you can tell me that, you know,
it's gonna shock you.
Right.
Yeah.
And it's just, it's beautiful. And I'm going to say one more time that the people I work with are amazing. Like we support each other. I love it here. And I love it here.
Man.
That's a good theme. It seems like a lot of people say that work here. Buddha, you know, shares advance. Ray, like, I love working here. You know, just being a part of seeing people make changes, positive changes, and being able to be a positive figure in other people's lives, too, as myself, right? Because, like you said, you know, we owe ourselves a big amends for putting ourselves through the stuff we did, right? And when we can do that and go home and put my head on a pillow and feel good about the person who I was that day and treated people kindly and with respect and didn't have to lie, cheat, steal, do anything, you know, besides just be present for people, is a great feeling, you know? And when you like where you work, you're going to, you know, you're going to go above and beyond too. You know, Buddha shares that all the time. You know, it's like he loves his job, you know.
Yeah.
working in electronics and doing the podcast and talking to clients and being a part of and employees, you know, other coworkers, you know, I mean, it's a great place to be. If you can't stay in your job, you're probably miserable.
Yeah.
You know, and to be able to come to work and get that fulfillment and then go home and fill everybody else's bucket and ladle.
Yeah. Right?
Nothing better than that.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, all the money in the world can't replace that feeling.
Nope.
You can mask it with money.
I think it's truly amazing, too, because, I mean, I didn't comment much through your story because it was just so impactful. And, like, you went through so much trauma before you were even an adult than most people go through in their whole life.
God.
And it's heart-wrenching to hear what you went through, but it's encouraging because I know that each person that walks through our door and encounters you, it's going to truly encourage them to keep pushing through whatever they've been through.
Yeah, it's going to impact them in such a positive way.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You being in their lives too like that.
I'm at a loss for words. Like, you know, listening to your story, man. I mean, what I hear as a person, like a third party, right, is I see, you know, it started off with the trauma and the things that, you know, that you said that you experienced, but what I noticed throughout the pattern of your story was that you never gave up searching for something, searching for a way out, mm-hmm. searching for, you know, light at the end of that tunnel. And I know so many people that haven't experienced even half of what you've gone through and they give up on themselves or they, you know, they, something happens, they take their life, something horrible like that, you know, and how beautiful in your story to know that you continue to keep searching, dude. Like it's obvious like that you are happy and you're healthy and you're feeling good and you got a smile on. And I just, I want to make sure that I let you know, just how powerful that story is and how proud of you. I think I speak on all of us, you know, on behalf of all of us on how proud of you that we are and thankful that you're here.
Thank you so much.
Yeah, because your story, I mean, granted, you don't have to get into the nitty gritty details, but your story and people listening, you're going to impact a lot of people, you know, and you're going to give a lot of people a lot of hope.
Yeah.
You know, encouragement and all those things when we just feel like dead.
Yeah.
You know, to be able to hear that and see what you've been through and where you're at today, you know, is why we do what we do.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? And it is. It's crazy. It definitely impacted me today.
Yeah.
I mean, I just, you know, I'm not alone. This happens to a lot of not only girls, it happens to boys too.
Mm-hmm.
And I just want to encourage anyone who's gone through that, just don't give up. That does not, it doesn't have to define us. We have so much to offer people that have been through abuse. Don't listen to what they say you are. Define yourself.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that's
yeah, don't ever give up. Just get up, you know, because you're worth it. You're worth it.
Man, beautiful story.
I just want to thank you for being so transparent too, because I know a lot of that had to be so hard to talk about again, but I truly, I just believe that even through this podcast, you're going to reach people. Mm-hmm. And I feel like one day you could be at work and somebody's going to say, I'm here because I listened to you on the podcast and I wanted to push for myself. That you just, it's really been so encouraging to me to hear your story and to want to share with people in my life that I think will benefit from hearing it.
Yeah. So if there's one thing you can pinpoint like that makes you the happiest here at work that you do, what is that? That brings you the most joy and the most, you know,
besides being on the podcast.
Yeah, besides the podcast. But you know, something that you get to do daily that just reaches and touches your heart.
Well, I mean, I do a group on Saturday and I take everybody for a walk and I love that.
Cool.
Yeah.
I love connecting with clients and just like hanging out with them. They're so cool. But I have to, this is going to sound so weird.
Try us. Seriously, try us and see.
Yeah.
I love delivering packages and property to people because I just love it when I'm like, here you go. And they're like, oh, my package came.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And like, and I love, just I like being a part of making sure people have what they need. And I just like it when I get out of my car and I see everybody and I get to check in with everyone. How's your day? How are you doing? Mm-hmm. And I always know when, or I think I always know when someone's having a bad day, and I'm like, hey, what's going on? And I love everybody here. I just love everybody here. I just love being here.
Nice,
man. Well, thank you so much, yeah. Miss Leslie. Your spirit and everything is shining through right now, dude. I'm very thankful that you came and shared your story.
Yeah,
thank you.
A lot of people always say, "Well, I'm not so sure I want to do it, or I'm nervous, or I'm anxious." But once you get in here and you sit in here and you get to just kind of talk, it's very refreshing,
mm-hmm.
you know, and it's completely different from how she walked in, how she's going to leave.
Yeah, absolutely. That's
all smiles
crazy.
And she's not, even though it's hot as hell in here.
It is really hot in here.
You know, but no, thank you very much for taking the time to come and share your story. It's not easy, you know, but being transparent and stuff like that is definitely a must, you know, and man, this is pretty powerful.
Yeah, it is. It is, man.
I'm pretty speechless, but thank you.
Yes.
Thank you. It was great. Thank you so much.
Yeah.
All right, ladies and gentlemen, please, one more time, give it up.
Yeah.
Miss Leslie, man, really, thank you for coming through. You know, for all the listeners out there, thank you guys so much for tuning in. Please make sure that you share this episode with somebody that you know could benefit from it. And, you know, we thank you guys for the continued support. We're in the 50s now. Excited for the future. Ladies and gentlemen, I hope you guys have a beautiful rest of your week. Much love. God bless and peace. What's going on, everybody? This is Buddha from the R-Cast, and I just wanted to thank you for checking out this week's episode. It means a lot, and if you could share it with a friend or a loved one, somebody you need in recovery, or maybe somebody who just needs that little bit of extra positivity in their life, we'd greatly appreciate it. If you would like to join us here on the R-Cast, either in the studio live or online, hit us up. The links are down in the show notes of this episode, and on there, you can find direct links to our main website here at America's Rehab Campus and all of our social media platforms. Follow us! We keep the posts positive and motivational, focused on recovery, health, and wellness. As you know, in this modern day and age, we need as much love as possible, y'all. And as always, if you or somebody you know is in need of substance abuse treatment, please don't hesitate to give us a call. We're open 24 hours a day, and our direct phone number is 1-833-272-7342. Once again, that phone number is 1-833-272-7342. I hope you all have a beautiful rest of your day. Much love, and God bless. Peace.